Sim.
That's your Canada Land podcast. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read every email you send. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadaland.com. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Our theme music is by So-Called Syndications, handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. You can visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Sri Paradkar, Toronto Star social and racial justice columnist, and the Toronto Star's first internal ombud. Hi.
Hi.
Today on the show, Trudeau and India. He's not dancing anymore. And the day that 70 communities each lost a newspaper. Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Nice to be here, Jesse.
Nice to have you.
We're going to lead off with breaking developments and more fallout from that explosive accusation by Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Over the past number of weeks, Canadian security agencies have been actively pursuing credible allegations of a potential link between agents of the government of India and the killing of a Canadian citizen.
Tonight, the Prime Minister stands firm after his bombshell allegation.
Tensions are high between India and Canada.
Tensions are high after Canada accused India.
An explosive accusation.
India has expelled a senior Canadian diplomat as relations between the two countries worsen.
Sri, I have consulted the Canada Land internal affairs analysts, our think tank, correspondence in India. No, we don't have any of those things. But you don't need those things to come to the consensus that this is a huge news event, not just in Canada. This is a huge geopolitical event for the world, or a significant one. I think that a accusation of an extrajudicial assassination on the soil of a sovereign nation in any context is a big, that's like short of an act of war. There are a few other ways that you could transgress on a country's sovereignty more than killing a citizen of that country on that country's soil. And for that to happen on Canadian soil from India, it's not like some rogue state. This is an ally. This is a democracy. Whatever the tensions are under the Modi government, it's not that I just can't remember Canada accusing another country of doing this to one of our citizens on our soil. I can't remember another democracy in recent memory making an accusation like this of another country. It's a really big deal.
It is a big deal for Canada and India. It's the idea of one nation going into another sovereign nation and killing somebody is not new. The U.S. has done that with what it considers terrorists in various countries, about almost 1,000 people, more than 1,000 people. Israel has done that in Iran, killing of scientists. So that concept is not new, but between Canada and India, it is new.
That's a very good point. There is still a distinction that I'm not exactly sure how to make it exactly, but it's about which kind of country accuses which kind of country, right? And
Correct.
Where they stand in the political hierarchy. Because some countries can kind of do that and get away with it, and some countries can't.
Right. So, yeah. So just when you mention rogue nations, I think about the U.S. first, right?
Yeah.
But that's not how we classify it, because it's also supposedly the world police, self-appointed world police. So justified or not, should we do it or not, then these become different conversations. But if it is true, which is a big if, right? We don't know if it is true or not. The government itself says it's a credible allegation, you know, so we don't know if it's true. But I'm going to assume the fact that the Canadian Prime Minister stood up in Parliament and said that means he has genuinely good data to support that this is what happened. If it is true, then yeah, it's inexcusable. You can't have somebody else coming in and killing off. I don't care whether he's, turns out that he's a Canadian man, but even if he was not Canadian, it's not fair game. Somebody else cannot come in and assassinate him. The question I have is, there was a bounty on this man's head of 1 million rupees. That's about 15,000 Canadian dollars. So was he killed by an Indian or was he killed by an agent of India? And how do we have the evidence to make that distinction? I'd love to see that, right?
It's a very good question. And given that they put out the bounty, did they actually send an assassin or you put out the bounty and then somebody does it and then you can plausibly say that wasn't me, or at least try to stand on that defense. Now, the fact that Trudeau made these accusations, even though he initially used very mitigating and murky language. These are allegations. We have credible information. That's not conclusive. He later said, and here's a tortured sentence for you.
We wanted to make sure that we fully shared with the government of India the seriousness and the depths of our preoccupations.
That's super weird. We wanted to share with them. My preoccupations are super serious.
Yeah.
I have very serious preoccupations. I have very deep preoccupations. No, but here's the operative word.
And indeed conclusions.
And indeed conclusions. And this is such an irrevocable bombshell allegation for Trudeau to make. Like, it just destroys the relationship between India and Canada. It forces other countries to orient themselves. Like, everyone's trying to cozy up to India for trade purposes. So, like, are you going to look the other way here? He'd have to be pretty goddamn sure about what he was saying before he stands up there and says it. And I want to dig into the actual chronology that led up to Trudeau making this announcement, because I think that this is a case for media criticism. If you read between the lines of what happened and look at the timeline, it's quite revealing. So we begin September 1st when there's this surprise announcement that Canada is halting trade talks with India. And no one's quite sure why. We need to assess. And, you know, with China increasingly, like, the economy is not doing well and all the issues there, India is becoming much more important as a trade partner, huge market. And Canada is not interested. Why? Then last week at the G20, there's this awkwardness, this weirdness between Trudeau and Modi. It's almost like Trudeau is hesitating to shake Modi's hand. And then Modi blasts Canada for doing too much to support Khalistanis and you know, looking the other way and tolerating all this stuff. And then Trudeau responds by saying, I brought up foreign interference with Modi. So I think it's quite reasonable. You know, Trudeau says we have this evidence. So when did he get the evidence? I think that it's quite reasonable to come to the conclusion that the PMO knew about this at least as early as September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So his initial tactic is not to publicly call out the Indian government and make these big accusations that they killed a Canadian citizen on Canadian soil. And that makes perfect sense because we are a middle power and that is going to lead to a chain of events where Canada has to go to the States for support and America might not give the support. And the Washington Post reported that they did not. They would not support Canada in this, really. They made kind of like a middling statement. Better to do some sort of soft diplomacy, chill the relations with India, try to work this out in a quieter way, but still being firm. You know, the LBJ quote, like, don't send someone to hell unless you have the power to send them there. Trudeau taking this stand, it's like he's kind of left there like a lot, like it really isolates Canada. So why did he change his mind? And on the Globe and Mail's podcast, The Decibel, Bob Fife, one of the reporters, he gave some of the backstory. And here's what he said. He said, on Sunday, I was ready to go with the story. Now, Fife and Steve Chase have been mining sources within CSIS for all kinds of stories. They've got people in CSIS who do not like Trudeau and who feel like Trudeau is too soft on all this foreign interference. And I don't know if it's the same sources, but they certainly are getting fed a lot of information. So they have the story. And he says that he had it confirmed and was ready to go on Sunday.
On Sunday, I was ready to go with the story. And we got a call from a senior government official, first to the editor-in-chief, David Walmsley, asking us to postpone the story for at least a week.
Wow.
On the request of security agencies who said they still needed more work to be done on that.
And he goes on to say that they actually had this negotiation.
So I said, well, I'm not going to sit on a story like this for a week. We'll give you 24 hours. We'll do it till Tuesday morning. But I also wanted to be responsible. And I said, well, you know, get your act together and we'll give you time to do that and respect that.
So this was on Sunday then, Bob. So you and Steve were looking into this issue over the weekend.
We had it confirmed. Wow. We had it confirmed. We were ready to go with the story, and we agreed to wait, to be responsible, to be honestly, to be responsible, because if there were reasons why security people needed a little extra time to inform Canada's allies and to give law enforcement or whatever time to decide whether, I don't know whether anyone was going to be arrested or not, but they said they needed more time. So we agreed to do so.
And then the PMO, I think acting in bad faith, tries to get ahead of the story.
And then they kind of upstage us, by the way, because they jumped the gun.
And the Globe and Mail learns that in that period where the Globe is holding the story, Trudeau makes this announcement. Shree, what do you make of that?
Wow, there were so many things in there. So to your first point about the Prime Minister would have known this at least September 1st and, you know, would have tried, why did he make an announcement right now? I think it would have taken a lot more time than September 1st to this week to actually rebuild relations with India for Canada. So if it was about building relations, then he would never have made that announcement. If, based on what you're saying about Fife, did they jump the gun and is it bad faith? Or does the Prime Minister think that the country needs to hear this from me so that they understand that the government is aware of what's going on? Remember, this was also a fairly nonpartisan declaration. Like, we didn't have the Conservatives immediately standing up and saying, how dare you say that? Like, they were all briefed. And so there was that moment, right? The rare moment in Canadian politics where we had all three parties kind of saying, yeah, like, this is our sovereignty at stake.
They represent an outrageous affront to Canada's sovereignty.
It is outrageous, it is shocking, and it is going to have deep and devastating impacts to Canadians.
I'm going to guess it was seen as bigger than whether we are going to upstage a newspaper or not.
Well, there's two issues. There's two issues. One is the PMO was not forthcoming to the public about this until they knew the Globe. What, right?
Yeah.
It seems reasonable that the Globe and Mail, and here, this is what the Globe and Mail actually wrote in their first story. Trudeau made the announcement in the House of Commons one day after the Prime Minister's office learned that the Globe and Mail planned to publish the story. So it seems like they were quite happy to leave this mostly in kind of the question, why are we turning against Modi? What's going on? They were not forthcoming with this information and this accusation until they knew the Globe and Mail was going to run with it.
Actually, that to me is a little bit more reassuring, because then I've been wondering, why did Trudeau stand up to talk about credible allegations? Like, why are we not talking about it at a point where we can actually say, this is the information we have, why are you doing it? So that makes more sense that, okay, he kind of felt like his hand was forced.
He was pushed into it. Let's think of the political context. His polls were in like all-time low, and all the newspapers were running all this stuff about how
the Chinese interference.
And then if the Globe, think of what would happen with him politically. If the Globe goes with this story, it adds to a narrative of a weak Trudeau who's getting pushed around by other countries. So instead, he kind of, like, I think, acts in bad faith with the Globe and says, hey, for safety reasons, please sit on this story, but then gets ahead of them. I've seen this tactic before.
Yeah, you know what?
The Kielbergers did this to us. They said, just give us another day and we'll give you better answers to the question. And then while we were being gentlemanly about it, they went and fed the story to the CBC so they could get ahead of it. And we scooped them by minutes on Twitter, which is exactly what happened with the Globe and Mail in this instance.
Yeah.
You know, and the PMO was burning their relationship with the Globe and Mail.
By doing this? Well, and if you read what my colleague Susan De La Cote wrote in The Star, she said this was actually a longer plan of moving towards transparency, which is what confidential sources inside the government have told her.
We can have another conversation about Susan Delacorte's analysis of the PMO, which is often very friendly coverage.
Now, the next question for me is, so one was the reason why the Trudeau government decided to come up with this when it's still in an allegation stage.
Yeah.
It's been received as not an allegation, but fact, right? So you have people saying, well, thank God, like, the government is finally saying this and we've always known it. And it probably is true. Like, I don't want to minimize the fears that the Sikh community in Canada has felt about repercussions about talking out against India. So that is also likely to be true. But tell me, what is going to be the logical conclusion? So we have this accusation out there. And let's say, for some reason, the Modi government says, yes, Justin Trudeau, you're right. You know what? This would be wrong. Let's open an investigation. And we did our own investigation and we found here is the guy who's done it. And let's say they're really doing it in good faith. Is anybody going to believe it? If you get a man and say, this is the assassin, this is where he was, here is his DNA, and he's done it, it's very easy to just call it a fake, a cover-up. This is the government scapegoating him. So I'm not sure that this is a situation that this is a mystery or a murder that's ever going to be solved to everybody's satisfaction.
I agree completely. That scenario that you just described is so unlikely. It's far more likely that if this hadn't become a huge headline around the world, that through backdoor conversations, you could say, look, whatever really happened here, go find a fall guy for this, and please, so we can get back to just doing business with each other, pretend that you had nothing to do with this. But it's now that it's being turned up to 11, it is so predictable what the response was, which is a full denial from Modi, and diplomats getting pulled tit for tat, and he's going to take no responsibility. It's hard to perceive of any path that is good for Canada
at this point. But I should also say that the relationship between the Liberal government and the BJP, the ruling BJP in India, was never good enough for that back channel conversation to happen.
Maybe. It's an impossible situation. If this was an assassination by India, it puts Canada in an impossible situation where the best political tactic might have been to just pretend it never happened, which had it not been. What I'm saying here is, I think that if not for the Globe and Mail learning about this,
we would never have heard it.
That's what I'm thinking.
That makes more sense to me, because I've been wondering why we suddenly heard about this. But I should also say, you know, look, I'm not so worried about trade relations between Canada and India. I'm pretty sure both countries are capitalist enough to kind of say, okay, whatever is most profitable to both of them. So that's not what I'm worried about. But I wonder, you know, with all the new immigrants coming in, with the students coming in, how are we positioning this issue, which is seen so differently from both sides? Like
The Khalistani
issue, right? And it's not, as I've heard some conservative commentators say, this thing happening in a faraway land. It is not. It's happening here, right? And so how do we, the rest of us who are not Sikh, or not, I shouldn't include myself, but like non-Indian and non-Sikh people, how are people understanding it? And how are we going to bridge that gap once you have Sikh immigrants who come here, and when you have non-Sikh Indian immigrants who come here, and they come across the sort of a sentimental attachment, a political attachment to the idea of Khalistan, and they see it as being violent and terrorist, how do you bridge that gap? And I don't think we are thinking about these issues at all. We are still thinking about it just as, this India-Canada, and it's that internal matter happening in India, and there's just a few people here who have this belief. We are far more interconnected than we recognize, and I think we need to have those difficult conversations.
As you say, we need to be having these conversations. Like, Canada seems to be in a very interesting place as the home to more Sikhs of any country besides India, and now it's affecting our geopolitics.
It is affecting our geopolitics.
You mentioned earlier that this kind of like was able to, you're right, strike a bit of a nonpartisan chord, because everyone is going to agree that the Canadian sovereignty, the NDP and the Conservatives are going to agree that Canadian sovereignty has to be respected. And it did hand Trudeau a much needed win and a moment of a certain kind of unity. However, it's so interesting. All of these headlines about Trudeau making shocking allegations, I'm almost jealous. Like, we're in the business of making shocking allegations in the media. And then people say, well, where's your proof? And now everyone's asking Trudeau, where's your proof? I'm like, well, he's not a very good journalist. Yeah. Like, show us how you got there.
Show, don't tell. Yeah.
That's it. And that's what Polyev is saying. It's like, okay, I'm not saying you're wrong to take this firm stance, but like, how do you know this? So I think we're all kind of...
Yeah, we want to see more.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I would trust the Sikhs who say, well, we've always known this, right? And I think there is an element of truth to that.
I want the receipts. If you're linking this to the Modi government directly, which is very... I don't even want to say implied. When the prime minister gets up there and says, we've reached conclusions about this, the Globe is right to say Trudeau has accused India of killing a Canadian. Like, that's what he did.
That's really what it amounts to. And I should also point out, the same rare non-partisanship occurred in India as a result of this accusation. You have the BJP and the Congress Party, which was responsible for this genocide of Sikhs in 1984. Suddenly, the Congress Party came out in support of the BJP's actions, saying that we didn't do anything and we have to support our own sovereignty.
Everyone unilaterally is saying deny. Yeah.
So they're saying we would never do it. And so there's nonpartisanship on both sides, which I find a fascinating observation.
Well, it's terrifying. Development. If both countries are completely united in opposition to each other.
Correct.
And that's Shortcuts. Sri, thank you.
Thank you for having me. Good chatting.
Likewise. Everybody, you can find us on Twitter at CanadaLand. I can be emailed about anything you heard. jesse@canadaland.com. I read what you send. Sri Paradkar, where can people find you and your work?
I guess on Twitter. Do not read the replies and quotes to anything that I tweet. But I'm at Sri Paradkar there. If there is a fee to be paid, then I'm out of there. Otherwise, just Google me at the Toronto Star.
Okay, a qualified throw to Twitter. This episode is produced by Aviva Lessard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndications by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hey, we're trying something new. We have a brand new YouTube channel that is filled with excellent videos. It's a whole new way to see our stuff, and there's some stuff there that you can't see anywhere else. Have a look. Go and search for us on YouTube and subscribe to our channel if this is something you want us to keep doing, because that's kind of how we're figuring out whether or not we should lean into that or not. Go check it out now. It is called Canada Land Podcasts on YouTube.